This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of spoken word entertainment. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/twim. This week on the show, the MPAA sees red over the red box. Is Creative Commons bad for copyright? And will college become open source? Right here on This Week in Media, number 150. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to This Week in Media. And it's going to be a tight show this week. We've got myself and Tim Street, and it's just the two of us. Hey, Tim.
Whoop. Hello, hello. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you here. And so it's the two of us chatting about media. We had a couple people that we were hoping to have on that are not going to be on today. And so, but I think we can handle it. I think it's a lot of the news coming up here is right up our alley. So anyway, stay tuned for that. And anyway, we've got the first story. We're going to jump right into the news here. The first story is a copyright. Copyright. There's actually a couple stories here. Copyright. So the first one is Creative Commons. Is it bad for copyright? So this is the real question. This is from Tech Dirt, and it's really talking about whether Creative Commons is the right solution to kind of get around a lot of the copyright issues, which we're about to talk about in a second. Tim, what do you think?
Well, you know, I've been a big fan of Creative Commons, but I do think that it does kind of muddy the waters and confuses people, and it doesn't really address how our copyright laws are out of date and really meant for a different time, so to speak.
Well, and that's really the issue that we're dealing with, because we publish a lot of stuff with copyright and with Creative Commons. And one of the things that, you know, it does muddy that water. It is one of those, but at the same time, it feels like that's the only thing that there is to do at the moment. You know, you deal with.
I agree.
I mean, you get into this whole situation right now where they had the top copyright official attacking the Google settlement. So, of course, the Google settlement. Is really around taking orphaned works, works that no one's taking, you know, no one's making any money on, no one's using. You can't publish them anywhere because you can't figure out who owns the rights, and they don't expire the way they used to. I mean, Dover Press lives on the fact that there was a whole bunch of expired copyrights that are being made available. You don't do that because we keep on extending all the copyright laws now because of the mouse. I said
yes,
it.
The mouse. It is.
I said it.
Definitely
it. It's because
is a mouse.
It's funny how everything expired until when the mouse was created, and then nothing expires. Everything, you know, and I think that sometimes are we losing? There's a certain cost, of course, to the creators, but there's a cultural cost by not being able to ever have this stuff. I mean, we probably wouldn't even know who Shakespeare was if Shakespeare didn't, you know, if his copyright hadn't expired.
Yeah, I mean, fortunately, parody allows us to mash up and have some fun with copyright. If that was somehow lost, we'd be in big trouble.
Well, and right now, doesn't orphaned work really destine something? I mean, when something goes, is now just gone. I mean, if you can't find the copyright holder right now, just no one publishes it anywhere, and it's no longer available. I mean, to me, it seems like a lot of what we're seeing with the Google. With what Google's doing is bringing some life back into something that's not making any money as it is, right?
Yeah. I mean, I have a hard time getting mad at Google for anything. I mean, if I had a book and they were digitizing my book and making it available for free, I might be a little bit upset. But other than that, I think it's great that they're making stuff available for everybody.
And here's the question that I have. Reading all of the stuff as I was prepping for the show, what really popped into my head was, shouldn't there be some accountability of the copyright holder to stay registered? You know, like every
Absolutely.
Year say, here I am. I mean, if it's so important that you make sure that you're going to get your money's worth, that you're going to make sure that if this is really a business for you, every other business, I mean, if I want to have a corporation in California, I have to spend a lot of money every year to say, hey, I'm a California corporation. And I have to make a decision. I've had more companies in California than I have now, because we just looked at you know, they were, a lot of times when you're doing film work, you oftentimes have another company that you do that in. It's a liability, you know, oftentimes limits you the liability that you can have. And so, you know, we'd have a corporation that was sitting there that was able to do that, to handle production work. And the, you know, we weren't passing enough stuff through it to make it worth continuing to do, you know, and that was the, and so, but isn't it, shouldn't it, there should be some incumbent, you know, some need for the copyright holder to stay in contact. If they're not in contact, I have a hard time feeling bad for them.
Well, it's just like domain registration, right?
Right. Exactly.
That's what it should be.
No,
like.
It really is. And if you had to pay your $8 a year per copyright to keep it registered, just like you have a domain registration, then we could clearly figure out what all the stuff is, what's going on.
Right, but you'd also need to have like your one-up registration with your legal fees as well, so that your lobbyists can lobby Congress to right. extend your copyright past the 75 years.
As an in-between step, if it cost you every copyright that you owned, if you had to pay $8 or $10 and just register it every year, you know that, and you can have it, you know, and even have it on auto. The thing is that a big holding company that holds lots and lots of these copyrights, that would turn into real money. Like, they'd have to start making decisions, and it's fine. They just need to start making decisions. And if you're a person who didn't do anything with the copyright, that just let it, you know, that's not making any money anymore, it's not part of your business, you know, then allow, if we can't, you know, then allow Google to go about doing what it's doing. I mean, does that seem reasonable?
Maybe with some special circumstances for nonprofits, schools, indigents,
which mostly don't hold copyrights, but I think that most of those folks that are individuals, that are schools, that are, they're not creating large numbers of songs.
Well, I mean, they might be writing papers or books or publishing, you know, different things like that through the school.
Right, but I think that one of the things that the concepts is the copyright shouldn't last forever. So if it's getting expensive to keep it going, then and you're not making any money and you're not distributing it, maybe you should just let it go.
Yeah, let it go.
Yeah. Now, this of course is not what the RIAA thinks, and now they have a special curriculum. Did you see this curriculum for schools?
I like that.
So hold on, I just got to read you one of these. This is once again from Tech Dirt, and. This part of the activity should help students recognize this is a special curriculum created for schools this year by the RIAA as a special service. This is what they're making available to make sure that they can improve our children's math skills. This part of the activity should help students recognize how song lifting, though it might seem harmless at first, can quickly add up to a large scale problem. Have students complete the calculations on the worksheet using a spreadsheet software or a calculator. If time permits, repeat the first calculation by having students choose a realistic number of songs they would take if they could get them all for free. Adding desire to the equation in this way can further dramatize why song lifting can have an enormous economic impact. So the answer is total number of songs lifted, 7.8 million. Total cost of songs lifted, 7.722 million, you know, and then it has some number. It's 926 billion. I don't know exactly where that came from. So the point is that they're trying to use, you know, create word problems out of why you shouldn't steal their music, which I find just funny. That's all.
Is anybody up in arms about this the way they were about Obama's speech to school right. children?
You know what I think it is most people went, yeah, we're not going to use that. I mean, there's got to be. Here's the big question I have is, if a teacher actually used this in school, would any of their students respect them again? I mean, this is the ultimate square lace problem that you would get into as a teacher. I know if I was teaching, I wouldn't touch this with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah, what was that, the marijuana film from the 1950s?
Yeah,
that they played in school and, you know, scare everybody from, I forgot what it was, but
exactly. It was a great marketing by DuPont. So the now on in the land of crazy videos, of course, now we have another a video here. Don't copy that too. So this is a nice little rap song that reminds you not to copy. I don't have audio on this machine right now, so I won't be able to play it for you. But it is a it's a nice little. Or maybe I do have audio, but I don't know how to use it. So the maybe I do. Hold on, let's try this.
See if it'll work. Try it.
I'm gonna try it. Hold on.
Are you gonna violate some laws by playing it?
I mean,
are you gonna get in trouble?
I'm sure I am.
No, it's news. It's news.
It's news.
There you go.
Let's see. Can we hear it? I'm playing it.
I'm not hearing it here.
Let's see. Oh, wait.
It's that anti-piracy classic, Don't Copy That Floppy. Two game-loving kids get a lesson from DP, the rapper from cyberspace.
Come on, guys! I thought you knew better. Don't copy that floppy.
Here's the new one. With really bad 3D graphics.
I love it.
Hey, Jason, you might want to watch out with all the copies you're making.
And bad green screen.
DP guy will be coming after you.
Whatever, man. It's just a copy.
Okay, you get the point. So
yeah, it kind of has a Ghostbusters feel to it.
Yeah.
Circa 1983.
It's only 20
four.
Years late.
Yeah.
Let's not hold it against them. You know, it's only 20 years.
It's awesome.
Late. Yeah. So the, once again, this gets back into one of those things where would you, I guess out of, from pure satire, it's kind of fun, you know, to look at it, but I'm not sure whether anyone's going to really take
it
seriously.
Yeah, it is that marijuana film.
Right.
I wish I want to say Stir Crazy, but I can't. Reefer Madness, that was it. Reefer
right.
Madness.
Right.
That was the film that everybody makes fun of. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, no, so it's, anyway, so it's, it is, yeah, so it, hold on 1 second. Let me pop something up here real quick. Yeah, so it seems like it's something that that someone would. It seems like that someone in a business, you know, someone selling the idea that we can make this video for you. I mean, this is mostly what it looks like as a production company who sold the record company. Like, this would be a great idea to bring this back up again. I'm sure they made $100,000 or $200,000, you know, doing the video for them. And it seemed like a good idea from a business model. Like, oh, what could it hurt? Well, the only thing that could hurt is the public persona of the actual record industry. I think it does more damage than it does good for them. Would you agree?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of talk about the record industry today with the VMAs last night. I don't know if you saw it or not, but Kanye West got up on stage.
That was ugly.
And took the mic away. Wow. So that videos are being done. I guess he doesn't like country music.
Yeah, I didn't see the video. It was taken down by Viacom very quickly from YouTube. So it was up there, and then I went to look at it, and then it was gone. I don't know why they've been
there's a lot
down.
Of mashup videos that are going on with it now. One of them that just went up before we went on was where they've done a mashup with Obama's speech and then use Kanye West's, hey, I don't have anything, you know. It's great.
Yeah, no, so. Yeah, I was kind of amazed by hearing about it. I don't know what actually, you know, what it looked like. Did you actually see it? Were you watching the VMAs?
Yeah, I saw. I wasn't watching the VMAs, but I was over at a friend's house, and we pulled it up online, took a look at it before. It had about 300 views when we looked at it.
Ouch. That's all I have to say. Anyway, but before we go any further, we've got a couple more news stories to dive into. But before we go any further, I just want to remind everybody that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider in spoken word entertainment. Of course, Audible has 50,000 titles to choose from, more than 50,000 that you can download and you can play them anywhere. Now, today I'm going to, I'm still in my kind of my foodie books. that I'm listening to right now. So I'm listening to, I got through Michael Pollan's The Omnivore's Dilemma and moved on to In Defense of Food. And it's become, you know, what's funny is that I started listening to it, and I feel like usually I'm way ahead of the game. I started listening to it now, it's in Newsweek, and everyone's talking about the health of our food system. And so that's the thing that I'm listening to while I'm cleaning my kitchen. So, which is usually the thing that takes the most amount of time for some reason in my house. I make all these salads. So, so anyway.
So are you cooking the food that you're listening to, or you're just,
I think it's really funny to, I was watching King of Corn on, and then I got myself a big salad with a lot of corn in it. And I thought that was ironic.
This is an interesting question. We may have talked about this before, but do you manage your recipes with your computer?
I don't mind.
I'm
on a diet.
Because that's what we were told when we used to go like through Tomorrowland at Disneyland or Disney World. Mm-hmm. We were told how in the future people will have personal computers that they'll use to manage recipes.
You know, I have recipe programs. I have recipe programs on my computer, and I have recipe programs on my iPhone. But right now I'm on this diet, and almost everything's in like a little package. And so other than my salads, which I make by hand, and my salads look identical every single day, I just slowly add little things that I wish I had had that, or I hadn't. You know, the only time it gets exciting is when I go to like Whole Foods or to Petaluma Market and I get something that's slightly different. Like, but you know that you've been dieting too long when you have... I had a bowl of Total on Friday morning at like 2 a.m. watching the movie. You know, a Total, not ice cream, but Total. And I thought to myself, well, I'm going to have to work that off tomorrow. It's like outside of my diet. So my diet's very, very...
But you're looking good. You're looking good. You're in shape, thank you, man.
I'm not in shape yet. I'm just thinner. So I'm working on that. But anyway, so I've been getting into this whole thing about food because I want to start growing my own food next year. This year, the season's gone. It's passed. But I have a greenhouse behind my house. And so I've been really kind of getting into this. And so my suggestion is In Defense of Food, which is another great book from Michael Pollan. And if you want to try that one or any other book out there, you can visit audiblepodcast.com/twim. That's TWIM, audiblepodcast.com/twim. And you can get a free audiobook of your choice if it's the first time you've gone up there. So definitely check that out. And as we kind of go through it, a lot of these are people trying to close loops up. And we have another story. The NFL is untweeted. You can't tweet. I don't think you can even sit there in front of the TV and tweet about a football game, according to the NFL. So this, you know, basically, if you're a referee, you definitely can't tweet. If you are in the press and you're there, you can't tweet. You definitely can't tweet if you're a football player. Have they gone over the edge, Tim?
You know, this reminds me of a MC Hammer commercial that I once worked on for Kentucky Fried Chicken. Everyone on the crew had to sign a release that said, "You will not look at the hammer. You will not talk to the hammer. You will not make eye contact with the hammer. You will not look at the flag girls. You will not talk to the flag girls. You will not make eye contact with the flag girls."
Back in media control. The question is, are they really losing a lot? I mean, regardless of whether it's right or wrong, there's a huge viral interest of this stuff when you feel like you can't
get it. They don't like it. When I worked at Walt Disney World, we would invite the press to come to Walt Disney World, and we would provide them with a camera crew. We would provide them with a guide. We'd give them a van. We'd have stories prearranged for them. We'd have satellite uplink times set for them. And we would get a ton of publicity because we made it easy for them.
Right.
Twitter makes it so easy for you to get your message out and for your fans to get the message out and for everybody to share and market stuff. I mean, like, if somebody tweeted about a great play that just happened, it might make people turn on a TV and watch the football game.
Right. Well, and I think that one of the things that I think that one of the things they're afraid of is that people will do what we used to do. So when we used to watch the game, you know, we really liked if you were from Pittsburgh, there's a guy named Myron Cope, and everybody has that guy who is like pure personality, great guy to listen to when you're, you know, and he's the home team advantage. I mean, you're not listening to just general ABC guys or NBC guys talking about the game. You're listening to your guy talking about the game. And what we would do is, of course, we'd turn the TV on and then we'd switch to KDKA and listen to Myron Cope talk about, you know, actually do the play-by-play. And they were timed, you know, well-timed. It's all live. And so you could just do that. And I think maybe one of the fears that they have is that people might do that if maybe there's a good podcaster out there that they'd rather listen to talk about the Steelers or the the Cowboys or whatever. But the thing is that it's just allowing some of this to kind of open up. And of course, the NFL is not getting their 3 cents out of that whole process, you know, is the issue. It seems like this is just another example of a big company not knowing what to do with this and not really embracing and taking advantage of the many good things that could happen, you know, related to this.
Absolutely. Missed opportunities, just old thinking.
Yeah. And so I'm afraid that, you know, this week is just a lot about this, because this is what was served to us as we went in, because also we have the MPAA. They are looking to close all the loops. So now this is the MPAA wanting to close one. Here's what they want to do is they actually want to hobble your current sets. So now a lot of the digital sets already know they can basically make it impossible for you to record. In fact, some people are saying that the new Sons of Anarchy, the show that just came out, actually has a record
shot in
inhibitor.
Red camera?
Is it shot in the red camera?
Cool. I think it's shot in the red camera.
But it actually has a record inhibitor built into it. So a lot of people are reporting that they can't actually record that, which is kind of funny.
You know,
given Sons of Anarchy.
It's a good thing, because I was down on Venice Beach and people were selling tons of Sons of Anarchy DVDs. They were lined around the block. Right. It's that popular of a show.
Yeah, exactly. So now what the movie industry wants to do is they want to be able to say that certain shows are not available. And their argument is that they would possibly do day and date releases, a lot of other things if they weren't worried about these releases you know, getting out. Number one, does this really make sense? And number two, could they really stop it anyway? I mean, it seems like there's always a loophole.
I don't, you know, if somebody wants the content, the whole piracy game is who can get it up online for free first.
Right.
I mean, it's just like tagging, you know, as long as there's a wall, somebody's going to tag if it's in that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Now, if you paint over it and you close the gap, you know, it's broken window syndrome. But it's also, how hard is it to break that window? If you do make the window harder to break, you're going to have less broken windows. So
right. And the other issue, though, is if they make this change, it will basically take a lot of HD sets that were analog only. So the early HD sets that were out there that don't have the HDMI connectivity. And so it'll render them when you can't watch these movies. So literally,
I have one of those TVs, one of those.
And people will be upset because they bought a TV that was supposed to work with their cable box that now no longer works when they want to use it.
Well, I won mine in Vegas for free. So.
You what?
But I'll still be mad. I won mine in Vegas for free, right. But I'll still be mad.
You'll still be mad because you're going to have to go out and buy another one. And the question is this timing too close to the fact that everyone just went through getting pushed to upgrade to digital TV, and now they're going to get pushed to upgrade to a new digital TV altogether rather than just the box?
Yeah, I smell backlash. Unless they provide you a digital coupon so that you can go get, you know, one of these, right. You know, then I'd be happy. I'd be fine.
Well, and the question is, I think the reason we probably won't see this is because I think that our government, after just dealing with the digital conversion and now in the middle of this argument about financial institutions and healthcare and everything else, this is just not something they want to. This is not a middle, because the real question, this is a real middle of America question, because the people who don't have that, other than you, but I mean, a lot of people who don't have digital HD sets are going to be people in middle America who got something at Best Buy 6 years ago, and they're going to be mad. You know, and they're
I don't think it'll be that many people. That
11 million
have
is what they're
sets.
Saying.
What? 11 million?
11
wow.
million angry, and you know, it only took evidently you can take 70,000 and stretch that to 2 million if you put the camera in the right place in DC. So 11 million can turn out to be a lot of people, especially if they're vocal about their
That's their a lot
TV.
Of votes.
That is a lot of votes. It's enough votes to turn a couple areas, which is why I
wonder which state has the most. California?
Yeah. Now, have you used Redbox? Have you tried Redbox?
No. I want to, but I walk by it in the grocery store, and I know people who have used it and love it.
Do they love it?
But they love it. I don't go to the grocery store that much, you know? So
I saw one.
It's kind of like, it's...
I saw one at Safeway. That was it. I saw Safeway, of course, is like the supermarket here. And I saw one at Safeway, and I almost wanted to get a DVD, but then I was like, then I'm going to have to come back. You know, yeah, you know,
that was the comeback part. If I could rent it there, drop it in the mail.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe.
Well, then you're halfway to Netflix, right? And that's the whole. That's the issue. And I think that what I think is interesting is that the question I have about, you know, because the MPAA is really upset about Redbox, and they're trying to figure, because they're undermining Redbox, is of course undermining the price point, because now it's only $1 instead of $3.99 a day or whatever. So it's really easy.
Right.
The question is does it really matter? I mean, you're talking about how many years away are we from not having plastic at all? I guess, I mean, really. I mean, there's going to be somebody out there doing it. But I think that the reason that they're seeing huge DVD sale drops is not because people are using Redbox. It's because, you know, they don't want plastic anymore.
It's death by a thousand cuts, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's everything. It's everything. We've got so many things we can do with our time other than watch DVDs right now.
Well, I think the problem is that a lot of us have now come to the realization that DVD printed in the box with all the liners and everything else is about 88 cents. So, you know, maybe if it's really nice, it might get up to $1.20. So that's and then they're charging us $30 for that piece of disc. And I understand that there's content on it and people get very upset when I say that. But at some point in time, that becomes an issue, you know, for the average person want to pay for that because I know it's not of that value.
I'm excited to see where the iPhone apps and apps in general go to kind of bring that back, and you know, will we be able to take that extra DVD content and experience it digitally? Because right now nobody's really glammed onto
we've seen
DVD
a little bit of the new iTunes. The new iTunes, iTunes 9 is doing exactly what you're talking about, which is of course giving you a little bit of that DVD experience. I have to admit I haven't upgraded yet, but I'm going too soon.
Yeah, I haven't got to. I just upgraded, but I haven't got a chance to play with it. But I am one of those people that misses liner notes and misses the tactile feel, but also the there was something about it, you know.
Yeah, yeah, and I have to say though that I've really become, and I think maybe this is a reaction to iTunes, is that I'm much more of a singles person now than an album person. You know, I just don't, there's not that many whole albums that I download anymore. I really go after those.
There's no reason to.
Well, I don't listen to the radio enough to hear the three singles. I think that's probably the other issue. And I think that's what's hitting, you know, everyone. Now, of course, YouTube is now trying to move into this. Of course, they have, they're working on a paid service for movies and, which you know, looks interesting. Is this something that YouTube can really take a lead with? I mean, we have Netflix, we have Amazon, we have Apple. Do you think YouTube has? Is there a space for YouTube to get into this?
Absolutely. I mean, people are used to going to YouTube for entertainment, and you know, for a long time it's been the UGC entertainment. But now, you know, you can watch. I mean, I was watching Ghostbusters on YouTube for free. It had all kinds of ads.
Right.
That were from like three different companies. It was kind of weird. It really made me think. Okay, who's really the sponsor of this? Because it was, you know, brought to you by so and so, but presented by but hey, I was watching Ghostbusters for free on YouTube. That was fun. Wait, that's my second Ghostbusters reference on this show.
Well, that's because you were just watching it. Yeah,
there you go.
I think the issue for me is that I'm so attached to my Roku and my Netflix account now that I have it all filled up with every, like, I have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of things that are now available, you know, with one little controller on my main TV. I just got I'm getting a new internet connection this week, just didn't bother. I don't want phone. I don't want cable.
Is this going to be a high speed internet connection?
It's not super high speed. It is pretty fast. I'm getting it from Sonic.net, who's local up here in Petaluma. So we have Comcast going through the front, and it was funny. It was a combination of knowing that there was someone local and a smaller company I could actually work with, as far as just knowing someone there when something goes wrong. Although I have to say that Comcast's response on
Comcast
Twitter.
Comcast cares on Twitter, yeah.
Holy smokes. I mean, it's just like I complain about something with Comcast and I get a response in about, 2 minutes. You know, I get a response. And we're working on it. We're trying to figure out how long it's going to take, what your outage is going to be. It's quite a thing. But at the same time, you know, I also like the idea of my house. I have an office house in the back and then the front house. And I like having them two different service providers. So what, you know, yesterday, Comcast went out And what saved me is, of course, I have this Verizon wireless thing, so I was able to keep on working because I had a bunch of stuff. I had these notes in Google Docs, and there was no way to get back to them. And so having two different providers became important. So I'm experimenting with Sonic.net has like 18 megs down and 2 megs up, which is still pretty darn fast. Not quite as fast as the 50 and 10, but the other thing I found with Comcast is that it says 10 megabits up, but it's not really. It's closer to 2 because it's 10. It's 10 for the first minute.
Stuff.
It's 10 for the first minute, and so if you are the average person surfing or kind of playing with stuff and buffering for watching a movie, won't feel it at all. But what I find is that once you have a continuous upload or a continuous download, there's some kind of packet shaping going on there with Comcast, which is why I chose to go on to something else. So that was the.
The interesting thing about having that high speed and with a service like this YouTube thing is, you know, if you go to Office Max or Office Depot and you buy one of these projectors, these little projectors that people use for presentations, not a lot of money now, under $1,000.
Right.
You can project big screen on your wall at your house or in your backyard, run it off your laptop, and get an amazing theater experience watching YouTube.
Well, and if the scaler, some of it depends on what device you're exporting out of. Like, for instance, a Mac Mini has a really, really good upscaler, you know, and I'm surprised at what I get. And the Roku has an incredible one because I'm surprised at how good standard def looks on my HD TV. It really looks okay. And we were projecting conversations with other women in Zimbabwe off of a DVD onto a full screen. It looked fine. That was the scariest thing. It's just like, you know, it wasn't effects film. But the point is that it really, you know, the resolution, I think we're getting to that. And there's a whole great article in Wired about it being good enough. And I think the big problem that the industry is getting to is I started buying Blu-rays and then I got my Netflix and I got my Unbox that all goes through Roku and I have my Apple TV, you know, and I have my whatever. And I was just like, you know, I don't think I want to buy any more plastic. Are you kind of in the same place?
I still have my Betamax, and I get every new movie that comes out on Betamax.
High 8's going to come back.
It's the highest quality you could get.
Yeah, exactly.
In videotape.
Exactly. Yeah. Final story for today. We have this is a little bit outside of media, but I think it's going to affect us a lot. And this gets into an interesting company. And this is again, for some reason, I had a lot of news from Tech Dirt this week, but there is a college called Straighter Line that allows you to spend $99 a month, and basically it's all you can eat to take courses. Now they don't have a lot of courses out there yet, but they're getting started, and you can actually get credit from different colleges through them. And you know that it's a very interesting possibility of having this kind of distributed. And the question is that, you know, what is a college degree worth today? Is the knowledge enough to do? Is knowledge enough, or do you need to have an expensive degree to prove that you are able to do something? And is online training combined with the rising college prices kind of the end of what we think of as college eventually? What do you think, Tim?
Yeah, I think this is a reality of what's going to be happening. I mean, college was always there. I mean, who was it? Carnegie that built our educational system? And the public school system was built in order to mass produce people to work in factories.
Who can mass produce people who can mass produce.
And there were higher learning universities, but that grading system still applied there.
Right.
And so now we're in a different age where it's like, I need somebody that knows PHP, knows how to use PHP.
Right.
Or I need somebody who, you know, is going to be able to work in Objective-C and program for an iPhone app. Well, they can just go on to iTunes, go to iTunes U, go to Stanford, and watch the class and learn how to do it.
Right.
And
I mean, because I know that for me,
they're employable.
What we need are people who can learn fast and have a good attitude. Yeah. Like, that's all we need. In fact, generally, we don't. I know that when my company has been hiring a lot, for me anyway, lately. And we generally look at people. Basic skills are important. But then what we really want to know is, are they open to learning new things? Will they learn it quickly? Are they able to work hard? Those kind of things are the things that are important to us. We don't, you know, because, now, where was your degree from?
I don't have a degree. I mean, example.
And neither do I.
Yeah.
So I guess we're the perfect people to talk about this. I think that's
pretty common with entrepreneurs.
Right. Yeah, and I think that it's, and I think that school, I want to say, back up and say that I think school is very important for, there's a large number of people and a large number of industries where that kind of training is important. I think that we happen to be in an industry where that kind of training is not as important. But I think that, and it's becoming less important because it's more about proving yourself, proving what you can do.
I do think it's important for doctors to go to school and get a degree. I would like to make that clear.
And lawyers. I think that's
okay.
There's a lot of reading. I mean, that's why I'm not a lawyer. I had a large family of lawyers, and I was I'm not going to read all those books. So if they had Audible.com,
been around,
exactly. There you go. I would have been a lawyer right now. I would have been arguing some case in the Supreme Court.
I think you would have been podcasting it in, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. Can I just put a video screen up there? I don't really actually want to show up there. So anyway,
I'm from Petaluma.
Yes, exactly. I am going to, I'd like to do a cross examination from Petaluma, and we're ready to go here. Isn't it the case that, anyway, so the...
Well, the other thing about this school, the university thing, is that the cost of school has gone up something like 900% in the last 20 years.
Right.
And it's all been subsidized through government loans. And so it benefits the school to raise their price of tuition because somebody can get a loan for it, and it's a loan that they can't pay off, or that takes them 20 years to pay off.
I mean, that's the thing. As someone who didn't have a lot of loans, that was something that I just didn't – I didn't spend my 20s underwater, because I – and I did a lot. And I guess what it – now, sometimes I say, well, I grew up in – I lived in a lot of basements because I didn't have a degree. I didn't have an easy way out, and for a long time I was teaching myself how to do all of this stuff. There was a lot of just edging through stuff, but what I didn't have was a huge, college payment that was constantly, over my head, to get paid off either.
Right. And you didn't have the internet.
Yeah.
You didn't have the internet the way that kids have it now. I mean, the kids that I see now that have access to Final Cut Pro, I mean, Spike Lee said the only reason he went to film school
was access to the equipment.
Access to the gear. Right. And Quentin Tarantino said, don't go to film school, make a film with the money instead. Well, you'll learn a lot more.
My whole thing is,
and I agree with both situations.
$200,000 is a lot of gear nowadays.
Yeah.
And not everyone listening to us is going to go into film school, but if you're going to go into film school, the thing that I get into now, and you want to be around, I think the big thing is that gear also attracts people. If I had the money, if I had $200,000, I would definitely buy a bunch of good gear, and then I would lend it to everyone as long as I can come along. filmmakers.
Wait, isn't that what you do already?
Maybe.
I was just in Pixel Core. I saw the equipment.
I walked away
with this microphone right here.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a, the thing is that it's being around. I do think what's important and what school sometimes provides is being around people who are smarter than you about whatever that given subject is. If you can find another way to do that, I think that can oftentimes be as valuable, especially. And I think these courses still give you a somewhat structured way to work. We're seeing more and more people moving towards a Phoenix kind of education. Even art schools, whether it's Academy of Art or Art Institute, all have thriving online curriculums now. And I think that we're moving more and more away from that. And I don't necessarily think that that's a bad thing. I think that there's got to be a more cost-effective way of training people, because right now it seems like it's just insane. And it's not just their fault. I mean, it is very expensive. When we look at bringing people in, I think of cheap ways of how we can provide training. When I think of I'm going to train someone over 12 weeks, I still think it's going to be, it's going to be a lot of money. It's going to add up to $10,000 to $15,000 or $20,000.
If you can get an internship where you get hands-on experience,
right,
that's the most valuable thing you can get to spend that time. I mean, that's how it was for me. When I was coming up, I was in school and somebody came in and said, here, and I got hands-on experience the first day. I wasn't getting coffee. I wasn't making copies. Right. And so now, I bring on interns and I make sure I return the favor. Make sure that, what's the deal? What do you want to learn? What do you want to get hands-on experience doing? And then I give them that hands-on experience. If it's something I can't give them, they don't get the internship. If they want to go to lunch with Jennifer Aniston, I
That's for you, right? that's my lunch. I'm not going to share that lunch. So and I think that my first job in radio, I literally just walked into a radio station and said, I love alternative rock, and I listen to the station all the time, and I just like to work. You know, if you need someone to sweep the floors, I can do that. And I treated it like $100. Here's the other thing, though, is if you intern, you have to treat it. I treated it like $100 an hour job. I mean, when I got there, I was on the mark, and I moved through the ranks there like water, because not everyone did that. And so, you know, so I went from sweeping the floors to being the music director and assistant program director within a couple of years. And morning, you know, did the morning
people
show.
People still hate you for that. I just want you to know that.
Yes, they do. So, but the point is, and in the same way, my first, how I learned 3D was not, I mean, I went to school for like a quarter, but then after that, I just, you know, I got an internship and I was the QA guy for a company in Denver. So I just answered people's questions.
I always thought that you were on radio, and then George Lucas heard you and said, "Hey, would you like to come work on Star Wars?"
Exactly.
I thought that's how it worked.
Yeah, there was 4 or 5 years of otherness going on in between that, you know. And again,
I learned some.
Yeah, and I paid, how I paid for all of that, because I was interning constantly, was, I DJed weddings, because I worked in radio, and so I had all these CDs, and so then I could DJ weddings, and I know a lot about. I know almost as much about weddings as I know about computer graphics. And wow. I don't really, I'm trying to keep that in the back of my head now. That's a whole other podcast there. So anyway, but I think that it's going to be interesting to see how this changes college as we know it. So those are the big stories for today. That's what we had here. It's a little bit, there's only two of us, so we moved through it a little bit faster than normal.
It was more intimate.
Exactly. Just Tim and I. And Tim, where can people find you?
At onetimstreet.com. One with a one, number one.
And that's at both the website, and that's also your Twitter, right?
Correct.
Fantastic. This mess that you've been listening to is This Week in Media. We are over and out.